September 26th, 2022. 1344 hours, Ward Green here. One of the things I want to talk about is quick fix or long-term solution. Or quick fix versus design. Or quick fix versus planning. Or quick fix versus research. Quick fix versus faith. Or quick fix versus patience. You know, quick fix versus postponement in the hopes of finding a better solution than a quick fix. So the reason I want to talk about that, one of the reasons, the main reason, is because I banged my knee on the oven again yesterday. I really banged it hard. And this was after I took the precaution that I taped the oven door shut, because I don't use the oven much. So I taped it shut with the Gorilla tape, you know, the best tape I could. I actually don't know if it's the best tape. I think it might be the best tape that I've got. I just bought it new, so I'm just trying it out. But I didn't want to use duct tape, because I know the mess that it makes. If you leave it for a long time, it's not the cleanest residue. Well, I've got two different kinds of duct tape. Let's not even get into that. But I thought that they changed the formulation of duct tape. I'll say that. But I actually bought a different brand of duct tape. That's why I thought they changed the formulation. Anyway, let's forget about that. But I taped this door shut because I didn't want to bang my knee on it, because it was hanging open a little bit because the spring wore out on the oven. And I used to prop it shut when I was cooking in the oven if I wanted it to be completely sealed to maintain the temperature in the oven. I could prop it shut with a piece of wood that's exactly the right length. Prop it under the handle. But I decided that I didn't need this door to be hanging open anymore, because I never needed it to be hanging open in the first place, first of all. And also, I was banging my knee on it. So every time I turned from the counter toward the fridge, the stove was sticking out further than the counter, and I would bang my knee on it. If I thought it was because the door was hanging open. But recently, just yesterday for the first time, I banged my knee on it after I taped it. That proves that the tape wasn't the answer. The problem wasn't that the door was hanging open. The problem was that the stove sticks out and I bang my knee on it because I turn suddenly. And I only bang it when I'm thinking positive thoughts, or when I'm thinking overly exalted thoughts, or thoughts when I'm thinking about things I shouldn't be thinking about. Basically, when I'm not being cautious, you know, that's the only time I bang it, when I'm thinking about how great I am, or how somebody else was wrong, or how something else was right, or how someone was right even, or how somebody else was. I think it happens when I'm thinking about other people's mistakes, or what is true, which is what I believe that is different from someone else. That's when I'll get overly exalted, or something will happen where I lose caution. I lose the ability to be cautious, or I lose fear of God, you know, and that's when I bang my knee. So the other solution I came up with, I finally got around to it. I thought of it before, is to glue a piece of rubber on. I think the reason I didn't do it was because I didn't have a piece of rubber. So then I realized I have these foam mats that you kneel on. They're that thick. You buy them at the, you know, construction or hardware place, you know, like Home Depot or something. They're that big by, you know, they're that long, or I don't know how long. That long by that wide, maybe. And they're that thick, and you kneel on them. So I had one old one that was, it was so old that all the surface is flaking off it. So the rubber on the surface makes a mess if you use it, because it leaves rubber shards everywhere. So I said, forget about trying to use that for a rubber pad. I can still use it, but I'll cut a piece off it. I'll use it for something. Maybe if I need a pad to kneel on, I can still use it, but I'll cut a piece off, so I cut a piece that wide off the width of it, so it's that long and that wide, and then I tape that using Gorilla Tape onto these onto the edge of the door of the oven where I keep banging my knee. So that piece of rubber now is at the right height for my knee, hopefully. So when I swiftly move, I'll bang my knee into the rubber, and that will not injure my kneecap. It's still not recovered today from the bang I gave it yesterday. It was a significant... I mean, there's no real pain when I'm walking. It's just a little bit of... I know it's hurt, I know it's injured, and I know it's tender. It's not... It's just a little fragile. Oh, and if I press it on something, I can feel, yeah, that's actually hurt. It's sore. So it's, yeah. That's an example of quick fix versus design. Do you solve a problem like that? The best solution would have been if I'd said immediately, as soon as I banged my knee on it one time, I should have said, well, there's a problem. Let's put a piece of rubber there. But I didn't know where the rubber was until just yesterday. Then I realized I'll use that worn out kneeling pad. I didn't know where I had any rubber that I could use for that. I would have done it probably sooner, immediately. If you know a solution that you can use for this kind of a problem where you're injuring yourself that can and you can improve safety, you should do it right away. Because the injury that I've done to my knee may never be reversible if I'm not careful, or maybe now it isn't even reversible. Maybe I've injured myself. Obviously, everything's reversible, but it may not be reversible in my lifetime if I'm not wise enough to find the answer. So when you damage yourself, it's the same idea with, exactly the same with using non-food substances to take away symptoms. Like people who use drugs, they don't want to admit that that's a drug, but they're using something that is a non-food substance, a chemical that's manufactured by a pharmaceutical company. And they're using it. Many people do that. Yeah, they use it to take away allergy symptoms or to take away inflammation or to take away headaches or, you know, like pain. So they use painkillers, anti-inflammatory, and they use it for allergies, right? And things like that. But I don't know. I'm not even interested in all the things they use it for, because there's too many to document. The point is, they're using the quick fix idea. Let's get rid of the symptom. They don't care about, in other words, they've basically given up on solving the problem or leaving the problem until the proper solution comes up, but solving the problem in a way that's healthy. Or understanding that the symptom is necessary in order to understand what's happening in the body so that you can address the issue as to whether you want to treat it or not, whether you want to. Because overall health is the thing that you need to treat. If you're treating a symptom, you're in dangerous territory. Like if you treat a symptom and you're not treating the overall body, if you're putting in anything that's not a nutrient that's beneficial for the whole body, you're in very dangerous waters, you know, very dangerous territory, because you don't know what's going to happen. You don't know what the consequence will be. You don't have a clue. It could be cancer. It could be anything. But you know, once you start, I mean, if it's not metabolized, the substance, how are you even going to ever get it out of your body? That's another thing you have to worry about. The body doesn't use it and metabolize it. How do you know that that substance isn't going to build up in your body and become a problem? Or even if you can verify that's not a problem, it's nobody under you can't though. But even if you could, nobody understands the way the body works at all. Plus, we're different in DNA, but you know our DNA is different. It and our body is a holy thing. Like it's like a temple. It's a temple. So therefore, like Jesus said, break down this temple he was talking about, the temple of his body. But the body's a temple, and the reason why it needs to be treated with such caution is because if we I shouldn't say if we do, when we do, we should, and when we do treat the body as a holy thing, then we have an opportunity to ask Jehovah for help in terms of what to do when we do have symptoms. Then we can be directed in the right path toward the right food or toward fasting or whatever the right approach is. Sometimes the right approach is fasting. Sometimes it's vitamin C if it's an infection. Sometimes it's, vitamin C is for infections, but not everybody should do the same as everybody else because we're all different. I mean, I don't generally tell people that specific people, I can't tell you specifically that you should take vitamin C. I can just tell you that it's been utilized successfully by vitamin C doctors, and that the conventional mainstream completely denies the benefit of vitamin C in megadose quantities, of multigram quantities. The conventional wisdom, they try to use reasoning too, and they're wrong. They try to reason out that it's the kidneys. Because in the urine, the vitamin C is excreted. After you reach a certain level, they reason that therefore you can't use more than that amount because the body excretes it. And that's a false reasoning. It's completely false. If you're sick, the body will use the vitamin C to fight the infection, if it's an infection. The body can fight the infection and does fight the infection, and you can take massive amounts of vitamin C, and it is utilized. In the case of an infection, even for cancer, the body will utilize vitamin C in mega, mega quantities. And it's a very safe vitamin compared to other vitamins. And it's a component of food, right? So the thing is, it's almost the one exception that we're saying to the rule that you know, if it's a processed food, we don't eat it. Vitamin C is a processed food in a sense. It's extracted from food or from it is a component in food. I mean, it's found in food. Whether they extract it or not is not the important thing. It's the same component as is found in certain fruits that have vitamin C in them. You know, that's we know oranges have it. You know, in particular quantities and or significant quantities. But for to just eat an orange wouldn't do you any good as far as curing an infection. Generally, it would do you, you know, I guess it could if you're right on the verge of an infection, it could stop it. But if you've got the kind of infections that I used to get, you're just flu. I mean, the kind that I used to get was just flu and colds, and I don't get them anymore. But that's because as soon as I feel any symptoms when I realize I'm coming down with strep throat or flu or cold or anything that I may not know which one it is that I'm developing, when I feel some symptoms that tell me that it's not just a normal sore throat from allergies or something, you know, when it's not just a dry throat that's causing it to be sore, when I know that I have enough symptoms to tell me I need to do something, or that I know I'm coming down with something. I mean, I have a choice, but I've never come down with anything ever since I've started using vitamin C in multigram quantities. I might take 4 grams or 6 grams or 2 grams every 20 minutes until it's gone. And so vitamin C has completely revolutionized my health in that way. And that's the only thing I know of that I'm willing to take in quantity like that. What else do I do? Well, maybe xylitol too. That's true. So there are exceptions. Xylitol I also take in these significant quantities. Which are beyond what you normally get in food. So I'm taking it so that I don't have to eat sugar. I'll take the gum, I'll chew the gum, which is xylitol gum, and then that will give me the sweetness that my body wants after I eat a meal. At least certain meals that cause me to crave sweets after the meal. Or that I crave something. I don't crave sweets. I crave something at the end of the meal. Whether it's that I'm craving I want a way to stop eating. I want a way to be finished. And I'm not sure if this is, if, I'm not even sure if this is the right approach, but we used to have fruit for dessert, right? That was a tradition in our family. Probably it was, it's true of, we know restaurants do that too. I mean, it's traditional. So fruit for dessert is the idea. Sugar for dessert, in other words. So that's why the xylitol for my dessert, the xylitol gum instead of dessert, which is also hugely beneficial for the oral hygiene, as I've talked about before. Anyway, so xylitol and maybe erythritol, if I get any, and vitamin C are sort of the exception to this taking things. Well, although all supplements are also an exception to that too, right? Oh, yeah, so it's supplements. It's a supplement. Right. These are food supplements is what they are. So food supplements are the exception to the rule of not ever taking a processed food, right? Food supplement is a processed food. But sugar is not a food supplement. Sugar is a processed food, but it's a poison, basically, and it's an inflammatory substance. It's highly inflammatory. I mean, the incredible amount of inflammation that I was experiencing is just... It's phenomenal. I tried xylitol in my matcha tea latte the other day, and it wasn't very tasty. It wasn't very good. It's not nearly as sweet as some other things like maple syrup or something, which I don't eat anymore. But the xylitol, I'm not going to use that as a sweetener or in my food. I don't think it's just in the gum when it comes like in the different flavors of gum. It's fantastic. It tastes amazing. Tastes great, and it satisfies my craving for sugar. It doesn't spike the blood sugar anywhere near as much as sugar does, so it's phenomenal. It's a phenomenal thing. I've already raved about it, but I'm going to rave about it more, I'm sure. I just can't get enough time to talk about it. It's just so great. So xylitol has revolutionized my dental and my oral hygiene. It prevents cavities completely. It seems like it seems like you can't even get cavities when you're using it in the right times in the right way. And what else did I say? Well, it kills all the bacteria in the mouth, basically. So it prevents. I mean, it prevents tartar and plaque and all that stuff. So you don't have any. Oh, it's just amazing. It's just incredible, because you don't. Those are other problems that cause gum recession, I think, you know, right? So you have all these benefits of xylitol. It's just incredible. Because the gums will recede if you get tartar on the teeth from... It kills the gums. On the edges of the gums. If the plaque becomes tartar. So that's phenomenally important that you have good oral hygiene. One way is to brush a lot or xylitol. Amazing. Xylitol gum. And sugar is so poisonous and deadly. I just can't say enough about that either. It's so incredibly insidious, because everybody thinks it's all right, or the general candy salesman mentality of the world is it. They all are promoting sugar. But we don't have energy to go condemning them. I mean, we'd use a lot of energy doing that, because there's a lot of that going on. So we don't have any energy to do that. We've got to focus on what we can do, right? Which is find solutions to the problem. Like, this might be the cure for diabetes. Xylitol might be the cure for diabetes. Easily could be. But I mean, I don't think the cure for diabetes, like I said before, is going to be one. You know, catch all for everybody, or one size fits all. I don't think the cure for diabetes is like that. I think it's each person has to master their own diet. They have to master their own diet, and I'm nowhere close to mastering mine. And I've worked a long time already, or a fair amount of years, a fair number of years already working on it. I need to figure out. I'm trying to lose this weight here, but now. In my stomach, I think I might be even gaining weight, because I'm now that I'm not eating sugar, my cravings are not being satisfied. So I'm taking more, eating more of the cream, maybe in the lattes. I might be. I don't know. I don't think I am, but yeah, I was looking at myself the other day, and I thought I was losing weight the other day, but then the next day, after I ate, I thought my stomach looked flat, but then the next day after I ate, my stomach was not flat. So, and I still have a roll of fat in my abdomen that I know is not gone, and I know how tight my pants are. I don't need to weigh myself to know that. I know how tight the pants are because I have some belts that just barely fit, and so I know that if those belts stop fitting me, I'm gaining weight. If those belts, you know, get tighter, I'm going to be gaining weight. And that is bad. It's dangerous. So today I've already had my breakfast. And we're going to read some things today. Yeah, I wanted to talk about... Yeah, we were talking... Okay, to finish the quick fix idea versus... So the quick fix would be, you know, you're hungry, you eat something, right? Or you crave sugar, you eat some sugar. Or you have a headache, you take a painkiller. You have inflammation, you take an anti-inflammatory. Those are the quick fix ideas. Those are all quick fix. Most quick fix are bad ideas, okay? I mean, almost all of them, I'd say all of those are bad. But, depending on how hungry you are, if you're really hungry, I guess then eating something may not be bad. I mean, eating something because you have a momentary thought about food is not a good thing. The heavens are declaring the glory of God. Psalm 19:2. One night after another night shows forth knowledge. That's the scripture I was thinking of. So if you think you want, like, I'm going to apply it to the other situation that inspired me to talk about this. I wanted to get a new toothbrush because, by the way, my toothbrush, that's right, an update on my toothbrush, okay? The one I thought was broken is broken. It finally broke internally, so it now makes a much louder vibration, and now it's still set on the lowest setting, but it now vibrates too much. So it did break internally, so I was right about that, apparently. Jehovah was right, I should say. He was the one who made me aware that it was breaking. This is my older of my two engines for my toothbrushes. And by the way, I have to wear a warmer, longer balaclava here, or headdress, to protect my neck from the cold as the fall approaches. If I don't do that, well, right now I have great flexibility in my neck, or almost. It's not great in both directions, but I couldn't turn to the left earlier today. That was because the cold draft on the neck. When I wear one of these, solves that problem in the winter, completely solves it. So that's a huge, huge thing that I learned about, was keeping the neck warm is the answer to these stiff neck problems, the cricks in the neck, and all the terrible neck pain. I was going to order a new toothbrush, right? That's what I was talking about. And then I thought I didn't have to, but now I do. So now, last night I almost ordered it, but then I realized I can't do that. It took me 2 hours of research and I still couldn't decide. And I realized I got to go and sleep on it. That's that scripture book in Psalms 19. One night after another night shows forth knowledge. You've got to sleep on the problem is the key to a lot of these problems. If you just take the overnight, and my parents taught me this too, just sleep on it. When you wake up in the morning, my dad taught me this. My mom knew about this too, but they both taught me this. When you wake up the next day, you're going to have a different viewpoint entirely. You're going to have new insight, everything. And that's what happened today. I had new insight. I realized when I'm ordering the toothbrush, I need to order some other things that I also need in the interim, like that I will need soon. I need to order them at the same time so I can order everything and not be ordering twice. And also, it gave me time to do more research on the product, compare it with some of the other product that were available. When you order a toothbrush, the reason I mentioned the comparison, it's because I'm only interested in the cheapest toothbrush, generally the least expensive one. And also, there's another reason. They're only selling toothbrushes with a USB plug in. They don't sell a wall plug for the alternating current AC house current plug anymore. They only sell a USB plug on their toothbrushes now. On a lot of these toothbrushes, you can only plug them into a USB port, which I couldn't believe at first. I thought it's almost like they're trying to stop us from plugging them in. Because whose toothbrushes are always near a computer? I mean, who has their toothbrush near their USB? But then I realized, well, it's great. It's going to be okay if you're in your car and you have USB for your car. You're going to plug it in there if you're traveling. That's why they're doing it. But also, most people have 8 or 10 of these wall plug chargers already from having previous toothbrushes. That's why they're doing it. So I won't need to buy another charger. I can just use the one I'm using now. Probably got extra ones. In fact, some of them I cut the plug off of some of the chargers that I had so that I could use them as a toothbrush stand without having them charge. I just wanted to cut the AC plug off of it. I got 2 of them like that at least that I cut the plug off so I could use them as a little toothbrush stand. But anyway, that's a long story, but when I'm buying something, I'm designing things at the same time. I'm trying to think. And I also realized, well, maybe I could use this, which is the Apple, 5-watt charger, I think? Yeah, I think it's called 5-watt charger. 5-watt charger, USB plug. I could use that maybe to charge my toothbrush, but I don't want to, I like to have that available for other things. And I like to keep my toothbrush plugged in all the time. So that's not an idea. But also that provides a 1 amp. And these toothbrushes, I found out, only charge at 0.5 amp, I think is what I found when I researched it. A toothbrush charges at about 0.5 amp. No, 0.5 watt. Is that right? No, that's not right. Okay. I think it's 0.5 amp. I mean, how many amps do toothbrushes use in charging? Right? There's how many amps? There it is. 0.5. Less than 0.5. Well, less than 1 watt. Okay. Most modern chargers are less than 1 watt. But older chargers can be up to 2.5 watts. So this is 5 watts. Now, the charger might be protected against this, overcharging it. I think it would be, because it's still a 5 amp. I mean, it's not. Okay, I want to explain this too. We don't have time to talk about some. I mean, we have to explain everything. We don't have time, it seems. Okay, if you put a 5-volt charger on a lithium-ion battery, that's what we're talking about. 5 volts is the standard charging voltage. So if you put that voltage on a lithium-ion battery, it will accept current. It can't accept current faster, even if the device can provide more current. So this can provide so much current. It's like, okay, let's see. How can we talk about that? How can we explain that? I got the perfect analogy. You've got like a 1-gallon jug with a 1-inch hole. That's going to provide a certain amount of water per minute, okay? Flowing out from the bottom. So it's like gushing out. No air, there's no glug, glug, glug. It's just gushing. So you got one, that's a certain amount of flow per minute. But if you're flowing that water, and let's say you're putting it in a bigger container, like, or you're pouring it into a funnel. Let's say that's gushing into a funnel, and the funnel has a hole that's much smaller in diameter. You know, like a 1/4 inch in diameter, that funnel will not be able to feed the water through its 1/4 inch hole as fast as the 1-inch hole is gushing out of the gallon container. Logically, right? Although it also depends on how much pressure is built up. You would think it would depend on how much pressure is pushing also down. There's another factor there. So how much water is in the 1 gallon and how much is in the funnel will also be a factor in how much gushes out. But let's assume that the funnel has the same amount of water in it in terms of, you know, how much weight is being pushing down on the 1/4 inch hole as the jug does pushing on the 1-inch hole. Okay, and we could even assume that the 1-inch hole is in the bottom of the container, so it's gushing down, so they're the same. Whatever, we can assume the same. But even if the conditions are the same, we know the 1/4 inch hole is not going to be producing as fast a flow. So It's like a lithium-ion battery that can only accept a certain rate of current flow. So even if this can provide more, and it's not going to overflow. In the case of the funnel, it would overflow, right? That's the difference. In this case, we don't have the... This is not going to be providing... The current won't be gushing out of it. It's just capable of providing that much. So it's not quite the same as a one-inch hole. In this case, we have a one-inch hole that's connected via an airtight, a watertight seal. Okay, so let's... Here, we're going to make the proper analogy. We have a one-inch tube coming out of a gallon jug. Okay? Then we're going to attach a hose onto it, which is 1 inch on this end, and it couples perfectly and seals up. And on the other end's a quarter inch. That's what we're talking about. So even though this can provide the 1 inch, I mean the 1 amp, right, in this case, in terms of current, it's the other end of the hose, so to speak, is only going to draw much less. So like less than half an amp. So it's going to draw less than half an amp. And this can provide easily less than half an amp. So there's no problem, but it won't force anything. So there's no... But we need to know that if we're going to connect something to this, we need to know that this will not damage the device, right? That's why I'm explaining this. I don't think that can damage the device. At least you'd have to do some cross-check. You'd have to check it. You'd have to do some research to make sure that what I'm saying is correct. But I don't think the lithium-ion battery can accept, just because it can't. I mean, this is not, when it says 1 amp, it doesn't mean it always provides 1 amp. It means 1 amp is the maximum. That's what it means. So you need to understand what these things mean, the current rating. Now, when it says 5 volts, it doesn't mean 5 volts is the maximum. It means 5 volts is always what it provides. It's always going to be 5 volts. But when it says current, that's the maximum. See the difference? But, I mean, so... When we get into electricity, I can't wait to explain some of these things that I've learned over the years, and that's one of them. So this might be fine, but even though I know all these things, I still will not use it for a toothbrush charger because I'd still have to figure out. I'd only use that with a device that uses less than an amp if I could figure out for sure that it's not going to do any damage, right? Even though I know all these things I just explained, I don't know them to that extent that I still wouldn't trust them. Knowledge is one thing. You don't trust your knowledge. You don't trust that because you need practical wisdom or advice from someone who knows as well. You need experience. You need research. You need to find out whether it really worked for someone and what they said about it. You know, you need to know an expert opinion before you do it. Even though you know the theory, even though you understand it, you can still miss something. And that's true, especially with the body. Even though you know all these things about the body, this is nonsense. What they're doing, the way that they prescribe drugs for people, is nonsense because they know nothing about the body. And we're talking about, even the experts know nothing. So how is the consumer going to be buying drugs over the counter? They're drugs. These over-the-counter substances are drugs. They're poison, if you want to be more accurate. How are these people going to buy poison wisely and use poison wisely? It's a facetious statement. It's a stupid statement. It's nonsense. How is the public going to buy non-food items over the counter and prescribe for themselves how to use them? It's just ridiculous. That concept is nonsense. The experts don't know anything. And then, I mean, you got people getting cancer left, right, and center all over the place. How do you know what's causing the cancer? Especially, how do you know? You especially don't know what's causing the cancer when you have all these people taking over-the-counter substances. That's the problem. You have to eliminate that from the equation. You have to eliminate some of the variables from the equation so that you can get into studying how food affects people, how diet affects people, how fasting affects people, but how everything affects people without the poison. I mean, if you introduce anything beyond that, beyond food, you've greatly made things greatly more complex, much more complex. And that makes it it's already almost impossible. I think it probably is impossible to figure out everything, even if you avoid all poison, but it becomes multi times more impossible. There are magnitudes of impossibility. Like, there's a greater magnitude of impossibility. You don't want to go there because you're not going to be able to have the confidence that that Jehovah will help you either, because he's against use of poison and drugs. Jehovah's against sorcery, which is the use of non-food substances. You know, he's against that. You can't claim that anything is a food substance just because you claim it's a food substance. There are people who are going to claim, there are going to be people who claim that anything they do is any substance that they use is a food substance. That's what they're going to claim. They're going to try to claim that because I said, you know, something about non-food substances not being smart or, you know, not being approved by Jehovah. They're going to say, well, this is what I'm doing must be a food substance then. Like, I've seen people talk about everything that way. Well, you know, I'm not going to mention specifics, but I've seen people make absurd claims like that. So, I mean, it doesn't benefit us to specify what we're talking about and say those people did that, because then the other people who are using the other substance will say, well, that means I'm in the clear. What is a food substance? That's the question, right? I mean, if you have a craving for it, does that mean it's a food substance? It doesn't mean that, because people crave all sorts of things that are not food substances. So that's not what it means. It means you need to have some scientific basis for saying this is a food substance, this is used by the body, this is something that nourishes the cells, this is something that helps the metabolism, this is something that, you know, that the body needs to function properly, as well as your body has to tell you need it also. Like, you have to listen to your body as well. But it has to have scientific basis. You can't just... it has to be not causing anything bad. That's the other thing. It has to be a substance that's not known to cause any adverse effects, as well as all the positive things that it does. You have to look for those kinds of substances, not the ones that you fail to research. Just because you don't research the harm doesn't mean that it's not doing you any harm. If you don't know it's doing you harm, that doesn't mean you're in the clear. It'll still do you harm, possibly. Very possibly it'll do you in. So that's your responsibility to find out the facts about the substance, whatever substances, but about the substances you're using. And we're talking about food, hopefully. I hope we're talking about food and not... I'm not interested in people trying to justify, or I'm not condoning any use of things that are not food. That's the point I'm trying to make. I can't do that because it's complicated enough even just dealing with food and the supplements that are associated with food. Now, supplements, like vitamin B12... It's important. I keep it in a vitamin D container, but it's my B12, 2,500 micrograms a day I take of that. I cut the 5,000 microgram sublingual tablets in half, and I take 2,500 micrograms of B12 every day. Now, B12, I first started taking that when I got dizzy one day, and I thought I couldn't figure out what the dizziness was at the time. This is long before I started fasting or anything that would cause dizziness from low blood pressure. So this was, I thought the dizziness at the time, I think it was possible that I was experiencing at that time maybe some tooth pain also associated with the same tooth, 3/6 that's now got a crown that's doing much better now, by the way. It's doing well today. It was better since yesterday. So it's going better. This is really positive about that tooth, because I'm chewing on that side too. I can chew there. It's the bite is perfect, but the question is whether it can handle a perfect bite or whether it needs to be sub-perfect on that tooth. But I had this dizziness, right? And so I thought, and then I don't remember how I found B12 as being a potential answer to that, but I did find out that people... Oh, I know what I did find out something, yeah. This may be but I don't know why I would have discovered it at that same time, but I don't know how I discovered it specifically, but I learned that people who don't eat meat are often deficient in B12. That's what I learned. And also I learned that one of my cousins, his mother was being given B12 every day because she was advanced in age. So I knew that the elderly sometimes use B12 supplements. So I thought, well, okay, let's... but at some point, I was already taking it when I talked to him, actually. I knew I'd already started taking it. So, but the thing is, at some point I decided, well, let's try B12. And when I tried it, it works. I mean, it solves a lot of problems, apparently, because I've never had that sort of dizziness since. Like the kind of dizziness when you stand up suddenly and you have dizziness, you know, that kind of thing. That was the kind of thing I had. But it was quite ominous. It wasn't the typical, you know, passing thing. It was something that I thought, well, this is not right. So B12 seemed to be the answer to that. But anyway, we need all these different nutrients, and we need to find out what they all are. And not everybody should be taking supplements. I mean, when you're very young, how are you going to know what supplements are going to help you? So you only start introducing supplements as your body needs them, or as your diet dictates that you need them, based on you're not feeling right, and the science would appear to say you need them, based on what we know from scientific studies. And the best scientific studies are always multi-year, thousands of people, multi-year, controlled, double-blind. Those are the best studies, right? If you can't get so many people involved in the study, well, then you still have some information. If you can't do multi-year studies, then you still have some information. What are the other things you need for that? Or what are the other beneficial aspects of these studies? Double-blind means the patient and the doctor don't know. Neither one knows about what's being taken. That's what these studies are like. The controlled study means, a controlled study, which is all, which means there's some of the people are taking placebo, and they think they might be taking, they think they don't know what they're, nobody knows what they're taking, but some of the people are taking placebo instead of the actual supplements or whatever they're testing. They don't do many tests on supplements because, or not on some, not on certain non-patentable supplements. They don't do many tests on them because the drug companies, or nobody can make money from a non-patentable substance. They can't make enough money to finance a study. That's the problem. So there will be some studies financed by the government, by benefactor-type groups that want to help people. The studies that are done for things like vitamins and supplements like minerals, and like if you want to study iodine, that's another thing, or B12, you could study it if you had enough money to do the study. And that would come from some kind of, benefactor, or philanthropic organization that would give money to finance the study that needed to be done. We need lots of studies on a lot of things. The only thing, there's an ethical issue to do with. I'm not really in favor of doing studies because if they've been done already, well, that's fine. We should use the results if they're good studies that have been done. I'm not really in favor of it because there are some people who are getting placebo who might need something else other than placebo. That's the reason I'm not in favor of it. I don't want people to die because they're not getting the supplements they need. So I'm not really in favor of these ideas about some people are getting supplements and some are not. If you actually need supplements, you should be getting supplements. So the study idea is a sacrifice, right? Somebody's making sacrifices because no one knows whether they're in the placebo group or not. They don't know if they're getting supplements. And also, they're sacrificing themselves because they're being given a supplement whether they need it or not, just to test the result of the study, just to get a result for the study, to publish the result. They're being made into a human sacrifice of some kind. So that's the problem with studies. Animal studies can be even worse because they might be abusing the animals in the way that they're treating the animals. But I mean, so I'm not really in favor of studies. I'm just saying, so, you know, we shouldn't use studies that are using blood either, because the use of blood is not approved by Jehovah. Our blood is our life. We don't want to, you know, abuse our life, and that's, we're abusing life if we use it for our own intellectual purposes. You know, that's not how we should use life. We should use life to live. You know, I mean, that's basically the purpose of life, right? Is living. It is all the great things about life. To live the best life is the purpose of life. It's not to intellectualize life and to try to study blood. And that's why blood is prohibited from use in the Bible. Or that's the intellectual analysis of why it's prohibited. That's probably not the reason. Jehovah knows the reason, but if we analyze it, that's the analytical side of why blood could be understood to be prohibited anyway. But I know you can, even talking about it now, I'm wasting my life, right? Talking about blood, I'm wasting my life. We can't talk about blood. That's using it, so we don't talk about it. We're interested in living, and that means using our energy that the blood gives us to accomplish great things and then rejoice in the accomplishments and all that. That's what living is, right? So that's what we want to do. And to get our health also, yeah. Also, use the energy that we have to gain more health and strength and vitality. And then rejoice in that, right? And that doesn't mean we brag about it. Just rejoice in it, you know, and praise Jehovah for it. That's living. That's the idea of living. So I've talked about quite a lot of things here. It's because I guess I feel better today. For one thing, I'm remembering. I'm able to remember more things today, it seems. I'm sure I'm forgetting. Still forgetting a lot of things. I'm pretty sure I'm undoubtedly forgetting a lot of things. But and I'm not intentionally omitting anybody from the discussion either. I'm still following all my YouTube channels and that I follow. And I don't believe in subscribing to YouTube channels because I think it's lazy. Why do I want to be interrupted by subscription notices all the time? I won't subscribe because I think I want to be proactive and search and research all these channels that I've followed in the past. I do, and I will, but I want to research these channels on my own. I want to be able to say, I won't watch that today because I'm doing this. I want to be able to focus myself on my own free will, you know, by my own free will, focus on what I choose and keep up with some of the news that's going on and so on. Though some of the issues, it's shocking what's happening with, you can't watch certain political news because it's all politicized. You can't get any, like I'm only interested in hearing both sides. I don't want to hear all one-sided. And a lot of the news is all one-sided on many topics, not just political news. Even the medical news to do with people who are in favor of vaccination. All the news is biased in favor of vaccination, it seems like. So, but it's true of politics. All the news is biased in favor of one candidate over another. Or in favor of one mentality over another, like the liberal mentality over the conservative mentality, for example, because the media are more biased towards the liberal side. So everything you get is basically a lie in the media, and it's shocking. So I won't even watch a single article if the headline has something to do with sensationalizing or trying to capitalize on somebody's problem. Or I just can't watch that. My conscience won't let me. It's like when I said I can't take a non-food substance or an anti-inflammatory or a particular drug. I can't take it. When I say I can't, I don't mean I can't in the sense of it's not physically possible. I mean my conscience won't let me do it. That's what I mean by I can't. My conscience won't let me. I just can't do it. My conscience doesn't permit me to go there. So that's the issue. When you have a conscience that's tuned to the Bible and so on, you just find that certain things become it's not that it's distasteful. It's not like, well, I have this great distaste for that or dislike of it or a hatred for non-food substances. I don't hate sugar. That's the problem, right? That's why it's a problem, is I don't hate it. So I just have to let my conscience tell me, well, I know what happens if I eat sugar. And therefore, my conscience won't let me do it. I'm not going there because my conscience knows I'm going to be basically dead if I eat sugar. It's going to kill me. So, I mean, it's got to do with life. And when you know something is against life, like all these non-food substances are, they must be, they have to be. There's nothing you can take that's going to make your life better. Only people who are not humble think that. If you're not humble and you think, I can improve my body by my sheer brain power in choosing which substances to use, I can improve my body. I used to think that way. But when you're humble, you realize you can't improve your body, and your body knows better than you do, and your body is not capable of understanding what a drug is. It doesn't know what it is. It thinks everything is food. It only processes things as though they were food or nutrients. It's innocent. Your body's innocent, right? Innocent until proven guilty. That's another thing. A lot of people nowadays, this innocent until proven guilty is... That's how people are put in prison. It seems to me most of the people, maybe all the people in the prison system, are in the prison system because they were actually guilty until proven innocent, and they never got proven innocent. And then you have occasionally people get released from prison because they find out that there's proof that they're innocent. Somebody finds the proof that they're innocent, and they present that to the judge, and they get released. But this idea of innocent until proven guilty is a pretty valuable thing, and it applies to this. It doesn't apply to drugs. They're definitely guilty, but I mean, the thing is, they're guilty because they're unnatural. They're chemicals, right? First of all, or they're, in the case of sugar, it's another drug, but it's not a supplement. It's the exception, isn't it? Sugar is the exception to all these other supplements that are extracted from food, in the case of sugar, it was innocent until proven guilty. I proved it guilty by my usage of sugar. I proved it guilty to myself. I know it's wrong, but that doesn't mean that's true of drugs. But you know, if the thing is, if it's not food, if it's a chemical, and it's not a food derivative, you can already have proven it guilty, because your body won't know what it is. The thing is, the body's not designed to process it. Even if your body can, your body will do something with it, but your body won't interpret it correctly, because your body, there's no possibility that you're going to find a substance that is the correct thing that your body needs. But that's the only justification people can have, and that's what some people think, is that they can be smart enough to find the right substance that makes them better health-wise. But it's so complex, and there's so many ways you can die, that doesn't work. And I've convinced myself of that. And also the humility that tells you that it's beyond our understanding. That as soon as you know that, then you know you shouldn't mess around, and you shouldn't think you're smart enough. You need to be humbler and humble. Both humble and humbler. You need to be humbler than the druggy mentality that's the addict mentality, you know. The junkie mentality. That's what Dr. Jamnadas would call it. You're a junkie if you're interested in pursuing non-food items, or whether it's over the counter or not, or you know, non-food, any chemical. It's not a food. Any chemical that's man-made. That includes sugar too. Yeah, chemicals that are man-made basically are potentially death-inducing, deadly. But vitamin C is a huge exception. But all the other great, like B12 supplements and all these other supplements are great, great, great things. Vitamin K2 is fantastic. Calcium, magnesium. Hopefully we can get that from the calcium from dairy, but magnesium supplements. I take many different types of magnesium, like chelates, oxides, citrates, and bisglycinates in the magnesium department. And there's liquid magnesium too, of course. I mean, there's many different supplements, and these are all beneficial things that you need. If your body needs it, if it's scientifically proven that you will die without it, that's why, you know, it's acceptable to take it. If it hasn't been scientifically proven, then of course you're free to take it. But if you're not, you know, I just think you're wasting your time, to be honest. I really do. I believe I'm convinced 100% that you're wasting your time, but I'm not convinced. No, I'm not convinced you're wasting your time. I'm convinced that I would be wasting my time. That's what I'm convinced of. I actually believe that I'm just not interested in what you're doing. If you're pursuing that, you know, that's the problem, because I can't be involved in it, because I'm already convinced in my case it doesn't work. So that's the problem. Or it's not whether it works or not. It's that it's the wrong approach. That's the problem. It's the wrong approach to approach things as though you can change your body. That's the wrong approach. You can only do anything with God's help, with Jehovah's help. And those things are outside of Jehovah's they're outside of Jehovah's sphere of good things. They're outside of Jehovah's realm, I guess you'd say, or his kingdom. They're outside the kingdom. They're not in the. Well, every case is different, I guess, right? Every case is different, but I mean, there's lots of things like, what about topicals? We could get into topical substances. What about things we put on our skin? We could get into that, and that's a whole other thing then. And we still want to use only healthy things on the skin. Don't want to use parabens and things. So we can get into a lot of different things other than just ingesting. Like the oils I put under my eye, those are just food oil type things. So that's a food. I don't like to put things on my skin unless they're food type things. But then my skin cream, not all of it's a food or food items, but it's a fantastic cream that I use on my skin. So, I mean, it's been so beneficial and magnificent in the way it's worked on my skin. So, but that can, I will keep adjusting my knowledge. I will keep progressing in knowledge, hopefully. But it's not going to include, I'm not going to pursue the use of anything other than food. Food and food supplements and vitamins and things that can revolutionize health are the things that need to be pursued. If you have inflammation, it's probably because you're using inflammatory food or something that's, or there's some cause of the inflammation. So to try and take a substance to eliminate the inflammation is the wrong approach. You need to eliminate the cause. And you won't know the cause if you eliminate the symptom. So that's the reason for I don't like that approach. The whole approach of over-the-counter is wrong. Okay, let's get into Proverbs chapter 26, which is today's study. And also, let's do Psalm chapter 2, very short, which we'll do that first. We did Psalm 1 the other day, so this is Psalms number 2, little children. Why have the nations been in tumult, and the national groups themselves kept muttering an empty thing? The kings of earth take their stand, and high officials themselves have massed together as one, against Jehovah and against his anointed one, saying, let us tear their bands apart and cast their cords away from us. The very one sitting in the heavens will laugh. Jehovah himself will hold them in derision. At that time he will speak to them in his anger, and in his hot displeasure he will disturb them, saying, I, even I, have installed my king upon Zion, my holy mountain. Let me refer to the decree of Jehovah. He has said to me, you are my son. I today, I have become your father. Ask of me that I may give nations as your inheritance and the ends of the earth as your own possession. You will break them with an iron scepter. As though a potter's vessel, you will dash them to pieces. And now, O kings, exercise insight. That was the end of the quote. Before that, as though a potter's vessel, you will dash them to pieces, end quote. And now, O kings, exercise insight. Let yourselves be corrected, O judges of the earth. Serve Jehovah with fear and be joyful with trembling. Kiss the Son that he may not become incensed. incensed, and you may not perish from the way. For his anger flares up easily. Happy are all those taking refuge in him. So, now when I say there's the end of the quote, there's no quotations in the original scripture because there were no such things as quotation marks in ancient Hebrew. There's nothing. So, that's assumed to be the end of the quote, but it may not be the end of the quote, actually. The quote may not end until the very end. So, that whole thing might be part of the quote. Easily could be, but the translator here has assumed that, or the translators, plural, have assumed that the quote ended in dash them to pieces right at that point after that. But it's interesting there, it says that kiss the son that he may not become incensed and you may not perish from the way, for his anger flares up easily. Happy are all those taking refuge in him. So Jehovah speaks to his son there. But of course, we would probably think logically that the kiss the son doesn't apply to the quotation, because if he were talking to his son, he has said to me, you are my son. That's in quotes. He has said to me, quote, you are my son. So kiss the son is not going to be talking to the son. Son, kiss the son means kiss yourself is probably not what it's saying. It could be saying that possibly in a very remote way. But it's not the first way of thinking about it. So if we look at this, now, O kings, exercise insight. Serve Jehovah with fear. He's not talking to the son anymore. He's saying, and now, O kings, exercise insight. So Jehovah said to his son, you are my son. And then it ends with, as though a potter's vessel, you will dash them to pieces. That's the end of the quote of Jehovah talking to his son. And then it says, and now, O kings, exercise insight. So that's obviously not talking to the son anymore. It's the psalmist talking to the kings. Because then he says, serve Jehovah with fear. Although Jehovah could say, serve Jehovah with fear. That could be Jehovah speaking too. Well, we know the Bible is Jehovah speaking to us through the psalmist, whoever wrote the psalm. It's the psalmist speaking with the inspiration from Jehovah. So Jehovah speaking to us through the psalmist. And that's a beautiful psalm. That is a very unusual psalm in that it's an unusual chapter in the Bible, because there aren't many chapters there are a few chapters that talk about nations of the earth, but there aren't many that talk about the judgment upon the nations by the anointed Son of God and the anger of the Son of God and how he's going to dash the nations to pieces, as though a potter's vessel with an iron scepter, he's going to dash them to pieces. Using an iron scepter. There aren't many chapters in the Bible like that. Okay, so now we go to Proverbs chapter 26. Little children, this is our reading for today, the Proverbs reading. Let's pray to Jehovah. Jehovah, help us to read this rather difficult chapter in the Bible, because of the content being so rife with principles, so full of principled ideas, and so dense in the information content. And we ask that you would help us to be humble and open to this information so that we might absorb and understand it and thereby benefit from it. In Jesus' name, amen. Like snow in summer and like rain in harvest time, so glory is not fitting for a stupid one. Just as a bird has cause for fleeing and just as a swallow for flying, so a malediction itself does not come without real cause. A whip is for the horse, A bridle is for the ass, and the rod is for the back of stupid people. Do not answer anyone stupid according to his foolishness, that you yourself also may not become equal to him. Answer someone stupid according to his foolishness, that he may not become someone wise in his own eyes. As one that is mutilating his feet, as one that is drinking mere violence, is he that is thrusting matters into the hand of someone stupid. Have the legs of the lame one drawn up water? Then there is a proverb in the mouth of stupid people. Like one shutting up a stone in a heap of stones, so is the one giving glory to a mere stupid one. As a thorny weed has come up into the hand of a drunkard, so a proverb into the mouth of stupid people. As an archer piercing everything is the one hiring someone stupid, or the one hiring passers-by. Just like a dog returning to its vomit, the stupid one is repeating his foolishness. Have you seen a man wise in his own eyes? There is more hope for the stupid one than for him. The lazy one has said, there is a young lion in the way, a lion in among the public squares. A door keeps turning upon its pivot, and the lazy one upon his couch. The lazy one has hidden his hand in the banquet bowl. He has become too weary to bring it back to his mouth. The lazy one is wiser in his own eyes than seven, giving a sensible reply. As one grabbing hold of the ears of a dog is anyone passing by, that is becoming furious at the quarrel that is not his. Just like someone mad that is shooting fiery missiles, arrows, and death. So is the man that has tricked his fellow man and has said, was I not having fun? Where there is no wood, the fire goes out, and where there is no slanderer, contention grows still. As charcoal for the embers and wood for the fire, so is a contentious man for causing a quarrel to glow. The words of a slanderer are like things to be swallowed greedily, which do go down into the innermost parts of the belly. As the silver glazing overlaid upon a fragment of earthenware are fervent lips along with a bad heart. With his lips the hater makes himself unrecognizable, but inside of him he puts deception. Although he makes his voice gracious, do not believe in him, for there are seven detestable things in his heart. Hatred is covered over by deceit. His badness will be uncovered in the congregation. He that is excavating a pit will fall into the same, and he that is rolling away a stone, back to him it will return. A tongue that is false hates the one crushed by it, and a flattering mouth causes an overthrow. That's the end of Proverbs chapter 26. And that was my best reading to date, I believe, for Proverbs. The prayer really helps because it focuses the mind and helps allows Jehovah to help us to keep us keep our mind from wandering, for example, to keep us from allowing emotions about other things from intruding or thoughts about personal matters from encroaching on what we're reading. So it prevents analysis too of the material at the time we're reading it. And it allows it to enter in and thereby help us to analyze through reading. The reading can help us to sort out things without our even knowing what we're sorting out at the time. As long as we know it's good material, as long as we're reading the Bible, which is we know it's the inspired, or we believe. Some of us have reason to believe, but we know it's the inspired Word of God because it says it is. But we've seen the fruitage in our lives if we've used it already. We know it's the inspired Word of God, so we can trust the idea of putting it into our minds. We can trust that it's going to do good if we put it into our minds without analyzing it too much. Now we can benefit by analyzing it. We can benefit greatly. But if we can read it without analyzing it, then we can read it and hear it and understand it as it truly was written as it was meant to be, although this is a translation from the original Hebrew, of course, which is an ancient language. But this is one of the best translations. So it's the best that I know about. But it's that's why I say one of the best. We've got a rather interesting translation that's based on the Septuagint from the Netz Bible. It's a new Oxford translation, the Netz Bible Online. The electronic version is available at the University of Pennsylvania. And that is a new translation based on the Septuagint. It's got a lot of information besides the scriptures. It has the discussion of how the book was written and edited, how it was translated, what the edition was, what the justification was for the decisions made in the edition of this translation. So you go through all that first before you get to the first book of Proverbs. But then, I haven't read this actually in Proverbs or this particular translation, but I believe this is a pretty good translation just because it's based on the Septuagint. I believe it's got to be good. All the Septuagint based versions are good, I believe. Look at this. It's missing. Oh my God. It's missing Proverbs 26. Oh my goodness. It's not there. Hang on. Wait. Oh, there's 25. Okay, it's out of order. Hang on. So maybe 26 is there. Okay. It was out of order. That's amazing. And there's 31. Yeah, right. Amazing. Okay, so when we get to 29, does it end? No. Oh, there's more than 131. Oh, that's interesting. There's more than one chapter 31 here. Like, it's got... And they're out of order. Like, Proverbs 24 is followed by Proverbs 30. That's not right, is it? Okay, it doesn't have 31 yet. Okay, there's 31. Oh, it's a very short... Very interesting. I recognize the words in that chapter, but I don't believe it. It's necessarily chapter 31, though. Oh, you know what I did? That's what I remembered. Okay. I have a fascinating update here. I want to talk about what I learned about DOSBox X. DOSBox-X. DOSBox is one word. DOSBOX dash X. That's available as a download. You just download that, okay? And it unzips itself, hopefully. In Monterey, I downloaded it. It unzipped itself, and then I just copied it into my, well, whichever place you want to put it. But I copied it into my username applications folder. So under users, then my username, then the subfolders, under slash users, with my username slash, and then the applications folder of that. But you can put it anywhere, and it will, you can run it from anywhere. And it's just... It's DOSBox, and then when you run it, it boots you to the Z drive. But if you go into the configuration file, you find the autoexec.bat section at the end. Then you can put in a section where you can mount a different drive called C drive. Mount C. It's MOUNT space C space. And then you put your slash path to wherever you want to mount the drive to. Like, it could be a directory where you have your application, your DOS program. Put that path to that DOS program right there after mount space C space. Then put the path with the slash at the beginning of it. So it could be slash volumes, slash the name of the hard drive or drive, slash the name of the directory, slash subdirectories, etc. So you get to the path of the directory you want. That's the mount command, right? Yeah. After you mount it, then you change to that drive. So the next line will be C colon. Enter. That's the next line. That takes you to that drive. You've mounted it. That drive C is going to go to that folder. It's going to take you to that folder that you mounted. Then the third line will be run the program in that folder, right? So the next command will be the name of the executable, which you might require to put the .exe at the end. So in some cases you don't. I mean, it depends, I think, because I found that. But anyway, it's you put that in the autoexec.bat part of the config file. But I want to tell you where the config file is located in macOS. And that's interesting. It's located, it's fascinating. It's located actually in the same, like, there's a drive called MacBook Pro SSD. MacBook Pro SSD. And that is, you go to your users directory, okay? And your user directory's got usually your name. Not necessarily, but that's usually your name. In that folder, there's an applications folder. That's where I told you I put my DOS box, right? And I'll get into a little bit more detail later, because I put two copies of it. I put a second copy and put a -2 at the end of that name of that folder. So I had two copies of DOS box because I wanted to run it with two different programs. But, I mean, I wanted to link something different to the second copy, a different program. And I didn't have to do it that way. I could have done it by some other, you know, other way. But I'm not going to talk about the other way, because that there are other ways to... I think you'd have to have a batch file that would give you options, and you select which program you want to run from the options that are presented during the boot up process, right? I don't want that. So I just want to click and run the program, then click on another icon and run the other program. So that's the way I set it up, with two copies of DOSBox. It's only like a few hundred megabytes. How many is it? Let's see. Let's get info. Each of these DOSBox folders, they're called, they have a long name like DOSBox-X, and then -macOSX- a bunch of numbers at the end of it, and so on. It's a long name. It's -ARM64. Yeah. It's the DOSBox -X -macOSX -ARM64- and then the date and time. That's what it is. The date and time. 2022-09-01-21-21-35. See, that's hours, minutes, seconds at the end. And then it has an extension at the end of it, which is... Oh, that doesn't have an extension. No, that's just the folder. The file itself, or the folder that's in that folder, there's a subfolder called DOSBox-X-SDL2, and there's one called -X. The SDL2 is not the two that I added. The two is the version of the program that runs differently. So the SDL2 is different from the one that is just called DOSBox-X. It doesn't have a -SDL2. The -SDL2 is what I needed for my system, because if I didn't use that version of it, if I use the DOSBox-X only, if I used that one without the SDL2 on the end of it, it didn't run properly. My application was shifted, and I only got... It was small. It was seeing only the left-hand corner, and it was shifted up and to the right, and I could only see the bottom left-hand corner of my application. I couldn't see it in the window, so... They give you two options, because some systems work differently, I guess. So when I ran the -SDL2 option of DOSBox, it's got a program called DOSBox-X in that folder. That works in that subfolder of SDL2. That's the one I'm using for my system in Monterey. So I have two copies of everything, though. I just leave it all alone. I just ignore the DOSBox-X folder, and I use the DOSBox-X-SDL2 folder. And then in that folder, I created an alias, or I created a batch file with a command. I changed its extension to .command. So it's a file that was just a text file. You don't want it to be rich text, just regular text. And then you create it as a regular text file, or if it's rich, you change it from rich text to a regular text file using whatever method that you Google and find out how to do it. But it's simple. It uses the text edit program in macOS. There's a simple way to convert just to plain text using the menus. There's always a simple way, but if you Google it, you can... It takes a little time, though, but you can Google it and find out. So then I found out that I've got a program that runs using that .command file. It was just a text file, but then I changed its name also using rename after I made it... Well, first I had to make it... I had to create the extension .command. So it's called program name, whatever it is. In my case, it's not going to be the same as yours. But in that command file, which I changed to .command, I put in the same things I did that I just told you about mounting the drive, which is going to be the directory that has that program in it. So mount space C space, then the path to that folder that has that program. Then the next line is the C colon, then the next line, you know, then the next line, the third line is run the program, the command to run the program. So that I did. For this program, I did the same for the other one, but for the other one, I did not need to create this batch file and rename it command with the .command extension. And the reason I didn't have to do that is because there is a configuration file when you run DOSBox. And in the configuration file, there's an autoexecute.bat, okay, at the end of it. So what happened was I tried changing the autoexecute.bat at the end of the configuration file, but let me think what happened here. For some reason, I believe I couldn't do it anyway without doing it this way. But I mean, you could repeat this idea over and over and over; it would work. But you'd then have to create. You have to tell it. Wait a minute now. How come? Oh yeah, no. There's another thing I had to do. Right. There's an option. Well, let's look at this file. Yeah, here it is. Oh, I ran it. Okay. I ran the program. That works. I know these programs, they run. Uh-oh. It's giving me a long pause right now. That's not good. I tried to close the window and it didn't want to do it. So I've got to exit. I've got to force quit here. This does not happen. This doesn't happen normally. This is not normal behavior. It's not even force quitting now. It's hung up on me. The thing is hung up. Oh, there it is. No, it's okay. It's there. I couldn't see the force quit window, but now I see it. Let's force quit that. Okay. That took a while. And then it quit. Okay, let's edit this. Let's just say open with text edit. It was trying to open it with terminal. Okay, because it's a command file. That's why. So here it is. So what I did was I said this. Yeah. Okay, now in the command file, I'm wrong about what I said about the command file. Okay, there's a thing. Yeah. Yeah, okay, I got it now. I got it now. Okay, I got it now. Yeah, okay, so all of the information about which program folder to mount and all that stuff, and then the running of the program, all that's in the preferences file. It's all contained in the preferences file for both of these programs. But I needed a second preferences file, and then I needed to specify to run the DOSBox program with the different preferences file. That's what the command file is for. So it says open dash N. What's the dash N option of open? Let's see. What is dash N? Switch for the open file. Terminal file. Terminal command. So what is dash N? What is dash N? Okay. All we have to do is go to terminal, type open, and press enter. It'll give you all the switches. It says new. It says a new instance. Yeah, yeah. I wanted to say open dash N because if I click it again, I want it to open another instance of that program. That's why. So I said open dash N. Open space dash N space. Then I give the path to the DOSBox application that I'm running. Okay? And that's the DOSBox dash X dash dash. You know, it's in my user's name applications folder and it's got the DOSBox dash X dash Mac OS X dash ARM64 dash date time in hours, minutes, seconds dash 2 because it's the second instance of this DOSBox that I've installed, right? I've got two of these. I've got one called without the dash 2 and the another folder called it has the dash 2 at the end of it. And then I'm in the DOSBox dash X dash SDL2 like I explained, because it's only that form of it that works on my system, that folder I'm in. And in that folder, I run DOSBox-X.app. So I'm just running DOSBox, but I'm running it in the particular instance that I've got, which is -2. And it's got to be the SDL2 version, because that's the version that runs on my system. And then it has to be called DOSBox-X.app. That's just the app, the DOSBox app. But it's the particular form that I need for my system. And then I say space, --args, space. That means that arguments are coming. Then I say --conf, conf, which means configuration file, space, and then the path to the second configuration file, which I call preferences2. Okay? And why is it called that? Doesn't make sense. Oh, no, it's called, yeah. It's actually got a much longer name. It's called DOSBox-X\space, because there's a space in the name. So it has to escape that. It has to escape. Otherwise, you'd need quotations and all that stuff. So rather than, you could put quotations, or you can use a backslash. So normally all the paths have forward slashes, but when you have a backslash, it's because you're adding a space, and you want to make it clear you're still part of the name. So the backslash is there, space 2022.09.0/, because there's another space, and then preferences too. That's the final part of the name for this preferences file. So if I go there and look for it in my, now this is located, like I said, in my username, but it's in, I didn't say where it was yet. The preferences files are both located as two preferences files, one for each of my applications that I want to run. If you had three programs, you'd have three preferences files. You could keep on building another file with another open statement, different. Like the first one, you don't need the open statement, okay? You don't need the command file. The first application that you run, it'll just use the standard preferences file. So you just need to run DOSBox-X, and you put the autoexecute.bat at the end, right? Which tells you which drive to mount and all that, okay? Now, the problem with that is you can't run that for the second case, because it'll do the wrong program. So for the second program that you install, that's where you put this, you build a text file, and you change it to a .command name. And then there's one more step. You have to make it executable. There's a command, you can Google that, how to make a file executable, how to make a text file executable. You Google that, and then you run that in terminal, and it makes that file executable. Once that file is made executable, then you can run it. Then you can, in that file, you have your open statement, which uses a -conf to specify a different preferences file. So that different preferences file will have your different auto execute bat at the end of it. And well, it might have other differences too if you want, but I mean it could, right? It could do all kinds of different things in it, because it's got a lot of things in the preferences file, but it's basically not that big a file. It doesn't matter if there's two copies of it, you know, it's not that huge, I guess. Well, let's see how big it is. But we're going to go to this, we're going to find out where, I haven't looked at the preferences file for a while. We're going to look at that right now. So we look at my user folder, and then my name, applications. That's where all the programs are, right? And you can keep copies of the preferences file after you make them. Keep copies in your program directory that you're using. Copy them. And make sure you keep those copies of your programs and your preferences files. Keep them on external additional drives or someplace where you won't lose it later. Like, keep it as a backup. That's what I've done also. But now, I'm so excited about it because it works. That's the thing. I can run now. Now I'm running my New World Translation and Insight Books searchable database. I can run that. And I think I can run it. Here it is. I'm going to boot it right now. And I mean, I could rotate the camera around maybe and show it even. But, well, yeah, let's show it. I'm running it in Monterey. There it is. I'm running it. That's it. That's the actual program. And now if I want, see, I can go tab. Enter. It's going to run the search for the Bible. I go space bar, and I can now search. I'm not sure if this application's available right now, but I got it years ago when we were still running DOS and Windows, I guess, or something. I don't know. It's a DOS-based program. So, I mean, I can type in a word, like, let's type in heart, H-E-A-R-T, and say enter, it gives us all the instances in the Bible where in the New World Translation, 1984 reference version, it gives all the places where the word heart occurs. Now, it's not perfect. Some of the words like faith, it doesn't work for the search of the word faith for some reason. There might be workarounds, how you can work around that by searching for specific, like if I go back, if I put the word faith in quotes, maybe it'll find it, or maybe it won't. It wasn't able to find the word faith, because for some reason, the people who made the database, it was not made by the Watchtower Society, it was made by an external company. They didn't do it correctly, apparently. Well, look, I searched for faith in quotations, it only found two instances in the Bible. Obviously, there's a lot more than that. So, if you look for faith without quotations, this is a mistake. It doesn't find anything. It says there came to be evening and there came to be morning a fifth day. There's no faith in that. And so, I mean, there's no word. The word faith doesn't occur in that. It finds a lot of verses, but none of them have the word faith in them. So there's a mistake in that part of the database. And then if you press spacebar after you do a search, you can get back. If I search for, in quote, his faith. Okay. Now let's search for something. See, that was a glitch. Let's search for faith has. Search for those two words. Zero. Finds it zero times. So the word faith is, you know, if I search for he has, in quotes, it's going to find a lot of instances, right? Because it's a common thing. It's processing. I mean, 594 instances of he has. But the word faith is not present in the database. You have to find it some other way. That's one of the very few things that doesn't work in this database. But it's a phenomenal thing to have available, because it enables me to search for things in quotes and I can find them, where I can't do that with the JW Library app, for example. At least I haven't found out how to do it yet. But I mean, this is just it's just another tool. It's a phenomenal. Plus, I can search the Insight Book too using it. Instead of selecting the way I did, I could have said escape, and then escape again. And I could, instead of saying enter for the Bible, I can just press spacebar to search both publications, and then I can just type faith again. It'll probably find it in the Insight Books or something. Maybe at the end of all this. Maybe it does, maybe it doesn't. It didn't find it in the Bible, but maybe it finds it in the Insight Book. Oh, I just found the word faith. There was one occurrence. It's highlighted in red. There it is. It's found in 2 Kings 17:14, the word faith. So there's at least one. I think I saw another one, but it does find it in a few cases. But if I go to, there's another one, just went by. Now we're looking in the footnotes. It finds nothing, and it's just using the footnotes. And now it's finding places, but there's no word faith highlighted. So let's search again. Let's search for, what are we going to search for? Jehovah, I guess. You don't have to capitalize. It finds it in Genesis 2 and 4, the first occurrence of the word Jehovah, apparently. Because it's finding a lot of these. They're all highlighted, so it looks like they're working. So if it finds it, it gives you that, highlighted in red. The words Jehovah are highlighted in red. So if we go back to the word and search for the word faith, just for contrast, I'll show you. It finds a lot of verses, but there's no highlighting. It doesn't find the word faith. That's why there's no highlighting, because there's no word faith. It's not looking for the correct word, apparently. I haven't figured out what it's doing. It's just not doing what it's supposed to be doing, so I don't really care what it's doing. But anyway, I can run that app. Now, if I want to close that, let's see if I can close it. It's great because the mouse is escaping easily from the window. It becomes a cursor in the window, which is a high-lit cursor. But when you come out of the window, it you don't have to press some key combination to escape the window like you used to have to do. It's seamless. The mouse just escapes effortlessly, and then you just click on the upper left corner if you want to close it. It says, you are currently running a program or game. Are you sure to quit anyway now? Yes. So I press enter, and it escapes. Perfect. Okay, so that's that app. And then I'm able to get that in my dock. I could just click on it any time, and I run that program. And the other thing I have now is a wood program for investigating wood. And we'll see if that works now. It works. Yep. But if I try to close it, am I going to get this problem again? But if I try to, I can exit by another method. I could just say E for exit, and it exits. And then I have a batch file that I wrote that I keep in the same folder that it types exit for me. And I just have to say X, enter, and it will type the word exit, enter, in the batch file. So I don't have to type the word exit every time. I just say X, enter, and it's gone. It disappears. So that was a batch file. So that's got a .bat extension. In DOS, they use batch files, right? So in Mac OS, it uses a .command. It's the same idea instead of a batch file. In DOS, it's a .. Because I'm running it in the DOS box application, I can use a .bat file. So it's a text file that's just got a .bat extension called a batch file that will run. In the case of that file, x.bat, I just type the word x and press enter, and that x.bat file will run the command exit, enter. That's all it does. So that way, I don't have to type the word exit. It's a batch file. I could write batch files in DOSBox. Actually, could I do this? Wait a minute. You know what I could do? I could probably write my batch files in DOSBox to back up all my hard drives now. I can write batch files that say copy this to there, copy that to there, copy that. So all my backups, I mean, could be batches of file, batches of operations that operate so that I don't have to manually do it every time. I just realized I can now go back to using DOS to do all my backups. I could probably do it within Terminal, though. I can write a .command file, like I just did, for the wood program that I'm running. The wood program enables me to research the properties of woods, like their tensile strengths and all that. It's just a DOS program that was written by somebody a long time ago, and I still want to use it, so I have it as well, and I can just click on it. Now, let's see if I can click on it, run it. But it's got a difference that I don't need to mention, but it because it just makes this whole video too long. But it just doesn't work in the dock the same way, so I have to use it in a different place in the dock. But rather than go into that, I don't know why that is anyway. So if I click on that to try and close it, I can't close it. It doesn't like me closing the window. That's what it is. So I can't click on the upper left corner for this particular application. That's okay, though. I can exit it in the standard way. So that's what the problem is with this one. I didn't know that was always the case. I have to force quit, but I can force quit. It's no problem. It works. It just takes a couple of seconds. I'm gone. So there. The way to exit that wood program is just, it just appears in the right. It's to the right of the separator. So it just when I boot it, it a new icon appears, and it's in the dock. It's just a bit messier than the other one, but I haven't figured out any better way. But that's fine. It's not a big issue. I worked on that for a good part of a day. Maybe a whole day working on it. I had a day the other day when I had time to do it, and I love doing that because now I've got back my old programs that I use whenever I want to know anything about wood or whenever I want to research the Bible in the way that I used to do. I can do it. So that's using DOSBox-X, the great application written by some wonderful people who just do it for free. It's it's a great thing. And it's available for Apple Silicon. That's what I'm running it on, right? Apple Silicon. So this is Apple Silicon. Cause that's the Dash X. It's for Apple Silicon. The DOSBox it was called, and now it's Dash X for Apple Silicon. But it's a great, great thing. And maybe you can even run Windows using it. I believe you can, actually. You can run Windows in DOSBox, I believe. Because I saw that mentioned. But I think it must be much more complex. You'd have your auto-execute.bat and config.sys, right? But could you run Windows? I'm going to just Google that. I think you can run Windows. Like the old Windows, though. Like Windows 3.1. Can you run Windows 3.1? I mean, this is amazing. I might do that because I don't know why I would. Just as an exercise, maybe. In DOSBox-X. Can I run Windows 3.1 in DOSBox-X? For Windows 1.0 up to Windows 3.11, you can typically run Windows directly from the integrated DOS provided by DOSBox-X. That's incredible. Isn't that incredible? I could run it on Apple Silicon, Windows 3.1. That's incredible. So just, and all the stuff that is out there on the internet, that's a prime example of how they don't, the mainstream doesn't know anything. That's a prime example of it, right? Because, I mean, they'll tell you can, I know you can run QEMU, QEMU, and other emulation systems. You can apparently run the same thing that I'm running now, these applications, the DOS applications, I can run them in QEMU. But I've never used QEMU. I've used DOSBox before. I already know what it's like. You know, I know what it does. The only thing I didn't do before was I didn't get into the preferences files. Somehow I could run, I was able to run batch files before, and now you can't. I can't run batch files from the Zed prompt. When you first boot DOSBox, it gives you a Zed prompt, and I can't run the batch file that converts, that mounts the drive C and then changes to the C directory and runs the program. So I can't just boot DOSBox and have it boot to my program. I have to, well, I can, I actually have, I did, but I have to edit the configuration file. At the end of it, there's the auto execute.bat section, and that's where you put that information about mounting the drive folder and, you know, changing to drive C and then running the program. That comes at the end of that config file. So the first program, which is the Bible program, I'm running from the config file at the end of the program, at the end of the file, right? It's so exciting. I can't help wanting to share it. But the other thing is, if you want to find your library, you have to go, when you're in Finder, you have to go, you go to your user application or wherever, but you can just be anywhere in Finder. Press Shift Command period. And that gives you all of your hidden files. So then when I'm in my user directory, I can find the library folder, which is hidden normally. And in library, I go down to the preferences folder of that hidden file, library, or folder library. And at the end of, near the end of that is my DOSBox preferences. There they are. They're called DOSBox-X 2022-09.0 preferences. And preferences 2 is the other one. So those two files, if I say, let's say edit them, I'll just double click them and they'll open up in my editor. Now I can see what I've got. Go to the end of it. Oh, there it is. At the end in the auto execute.file, I've got my mounting of my WID program for that one, the changing to drive C, and then running the program with the switch that it wanted, which was a specific, the name of the program, plus I wanted to specify to use all the WIDs, not just normal number, but all WIDs available in the database. I wanted to use them all. So I said name of the program and then space and then all. Name of the program, by the way, is WIDPro. WIDPro space all is how I run it if I want all the WIDs. But anyway, it's an old DOS program. Probably you might be able to get it online. It's a DOS program. And then if I open the preferences file, at the end of it, for the other preferences file, I mean, the one that's not got the 2 at the end, just preferences, it's got the mounting of the Bible program directory folder, or what I should say folder, and then the change to drive C, and then it needs the name of the program with the .exe after it in order for it to run. That's what I found out anyway. So that one, so at the end of that preferences, it runs, and that's the default preferences file, so that I don't need to put any special command file for that. I just click on the DOSBox application. If I ever click on the DOSBox application, so now I can go back to my user directory. I can press Shift Command period to hide all the hidden files again. Then I can go to my application. It's easier to see when you don't have all the hidden files shown. I can go back now, and if I were to run the DOSBox application, DOSBox-X, if I run it in the directory which I set up specifically with my command, here it is, sorry, it's the one with the dash SDL2, but it's the second instance of the DOSBox app. I've got two folders called DOSBox. The second one, which has the command for the WID program, if I run the DOSBox app in that folder, it won't run the DOS, it won't run the WID Pro. It runs the Bible research because it doesn't have any ability to go to the other configuration file. So that's something to know. It will run the wrong, then I could say escape, and then X enter, and it closes it. But that is my configuration. So if I want to run that, I leave all the stuff there. It's going to run DOSBox. It has to be there. Okay? It needs the application, but it has to run it with the dash CONF switch at the end of it, right? Which converts it to the other configuration file. Because I specify a different path for the configuration file in that command, that information that specifies that is in the woodpro.command file, right? Which I can edit with a text editor. And it just says open-n, and then the path of the DOSBox app, and then the double dash arguments, or ARGS, and then single dash CONF, and a space in between each of those, of course. And then the path to the preferences file, and then it's it. That's it. It worked, and it worked fairly quickly, too. I had a few issues, obviously, in doing all this, but actually it actually worked with a relatively small amount of debugging. I got some things, and you can't say that things happen by chance, because they don't. You know, nothing happens by chance. Everything is determined by your actions and by the way the universe is created by Jehovah and everything. And Jehovah's allowing us to do things, particularly when he loves us, right? Eye has not seen. Remember that scripture? Let's look it up. For those who love... Let's look up for those who love him, okay? So let's go tab, enter. I'm going to use my Bible research program use the NWTIN program. Let's see. Let's put in quotes, for those who love him. In quotes, in the NWT search. Okay, it's processing. One match. So now I'm fairly sure I found it. There it is, 1 Corinthians 2 and 9. But just as it is written, eye has not seen and ear has not heard, neither have there been conceived in the heart of man the things that God has prepared for those who love him. So because I have this program, I could search quotations, you see. And that's what's so good about this program. That's why I wanted to install it, and now I have. So it's amazing. That's good for today. It's September 26th. The time is 15:31. I can see better from a distance. It's going to be coming up to 15:32. So I'll wait for that, because it's going to be 15:32 hours. September 26th, 2022. Word Green, this is a long video, I realize. I didn't make an audio for this, but I'll convert one. I forgot to use my Zoom recorder. Which I keep over here on the desk. That's right. I should have kept it here where I'd remember, I guess. But anyway, I can make them with Zoom, but I can also convert them. And I think they're slightly smaller size if I convert them using this video file. What I do is I use the QuickTime app to convert to an audio, or to make an audio-only copy of it. And then I drag the audio-only copy, which is an M4A file, I believe. Is that right? Yeah. And then I drag that into my music app. And then I use a conversion into MP3 from there. So it's Word Green. It's now 15:32 hours, September 26, 2022. I love you. Bye for now.